Hello and welcome to Second Take, episode 41. I am your host, Billy, and today, it's a sad day in Boston, the city that I root for in sports. As many of you who follow me on Twitter would realize, very disappointed by this recent outcome. The Celtics obviously just finished up their first NBA Finals since 2010, where they lost to the Los Angeles Lakers, led by the late, great Kobe Bryant. Now, 2022, 12 years later, finally got back. And, you know, valiant performance from a very young team, a team that didn't look like they were going to get to where they got mid-season, you know, a losing record team, a team that debated, like, people, including me, considered just saying, okay, screw this, blow up the team, keep some of the young pieces, obviously, like, you gotta take, like, keep Tatum or Brown, one of those guys, and then just destroy the rest of the team, restart ground up, because it was such a just so much going on during the early part of the season that was just atrocious, just bad play, inconsistency. And then finally, after those deadline trades, and even before that, when Josh Richardson was on the team and Dennis Schroeder really started to figure it out, then they made the trade for Derek White, Daniel Theis, who in the regular season did very, very well, and for the early stretch of the playoffs did well. Obviously, in the finals, I'm not even sure if he got more than 10 minutes in the finals, to be honest. Theis didn't really even suit up then. You know, Ime definitely tightened the lineups up for the finals, which obviously you should. You should be putting out your best players, but I don't even think he was able to tighten up those lineups enough because the bench just was a whole big problem. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Here, just kind of talking about the state of the Boston Celtics less than 24 hours after their Game 6 loss to the 2022 NBA Finals champion Golden State Warriors. Four championships for Stephen Curry, seven all-time for the Warriors now. Warriors dynasty, you know, we thought that was dead. We really, really thought that was dead. At least I did. You know, once Klay went down and the Warriors had that, you know, Steph was injured a lot during that season, but they had that really big losing season where they were able to pick James Wiseman inside the top five because they had such a bad record. You know, after that, you could see Draymond aging and everything, and you really thought it was over. A lot of people did. A lot of people wrote him off. And, you know, they came back. They had the highest payroll in basketball, $350 million. Not even basketball, the highest payroll in all of sports, which is insane. I learned this yesterday. When Curry was drafted, the Warriors were worth $500 million. Now they're worth $5 billion plus. So they 10 times their value since Curry was drafted with this dynasty and obviously the evolution of NBA profits, which has been a big thing, definitely a big thing in helping that, obviously. You know, NBA's over the past 12 years, 10 years, however long it's been, has raked in profits on profits on profits for expanding the game and all of that, and just popularity of it going up and up. But that much money, to think when Curry was drafted, you know, the Warriors as a franchise was only worth $500 million, and now somehow they're paying $350 million just to their players on their payroll. So that's almost as much. They're paying their players almost as much as they were worth back then, which I think is just insane for a franchise. And it really shows a dedication to wanting to win, wanting to improve your franchise, and, you know, paying to stay where they were. Because the Warriors, once Durant left, they could have given in and just said, okay, we have our three titles from the Curry run. It's great. But Klay's getting beat up. You know, Curry's getting beat up. Curry's getting older. And we don't want to invest that money. And a lot of franchises do that. That's why you see a lot of franchises fail. Because you have cheap owners, you know, crossing over into football with the Browns for the Bengals. You know, they luck into success by hiring good front offices that can get you good draft picks. But once Burrow's contract comes up, I'm scared for the Bengals because, you know, Burrow's going to resign, yeah. But I'm scared for the Bengals because I feel like they're going to try to cheap it out and that whole entire process is going to piss them off and stuff. Oh, it's going to be bad. And then, obviously, you're going to have to resign Chase and then Higgins and all that, all those talented players. You know, we're already seeing problems with Jesse Bates, trying to get him. So you see a lot of owners across sports cheaping out on things. But to win, you have to spend money. And the Golden State Warriors are a perfect just example of a team that had a great front office, built a great team from the ground up, and necessarily, you know, they didn't pay to win. They paid to keep winning. They had good drafts, which is how you're supposed to win, not by building super teams like the Nets have tried to do and has been a failure so far. You know, getting three All-Stars, paying for all of them, not drafting anything because they lost all their draft picks in that trade that killed them so much. So they pay a bunch of money to build this great super team. But oh no, now they don't have depth. They don't have chemistry. And ultimately, you see that the teams that are winning are the ones that build a foundation before you jump and you spend money on a good free agent to pair up with that foundation, like the Warriors did with Kevin Durant. Building an insane and the best foundation I think ever with a 73 win team, and then bringing in that extra piece that's gonna keep the team winning. So yeah, anyways, we're gonna get into the finals a little bit more here, but I just ranted a little bit on the finals there. Just I don't know. It's a big topic. You know, I haven't been. Second Take hasn't posted in, I think, like 6 months. A good 6 months. We got a new setup here now. New mic, new recording software. So I hope this is better quality than we had previous, because our stuff that we used to use back when this was Sports Report was not so great. But now we got a nice mic here. We got a nice recording software, just overall setups, it's a little better. So hopefully this sounds good for you guys. I've been really excited to get back into this and, you know, finally getting back is just great. So, and it's been great to hear from you guys on Twitter, because I'm still active on there, just staying connected. So it's been really, really good. This is episode 41, which is insane. 9 away from 50. I'm sure we'll get there by the end of the summer, hopefully. If I can, like, keep a consistent schedule, which, as we know, the 6 month gap, tough. But we're going to try to get there. And as for YouTube, the clips from this podcast, promise you, will go up. Because the YouTube is in. I'm giving a kind of a state of the union here. I'm trying to get all this stuff out of the way just before we start going here. We're almost 10 minutes into this recording and I'm still haven't gotten into it, but just a little state of the union here. The last time I posted a clip on YouTube or anything on YouTube has been was 10 months ago. 10 months. Which is crazy. The channel's grown somehow. I don't know how the channel has grown in that time, but we are up to 113 subs, which has been great. It's been constant growth, no regression, and I haven't posted in 10 months. So hopefully now that we're posting, we're going to get going a little more, and I love the support that you guys are giving us. Especially, you know, the last video we posted had 3.8 thousand views. That was the biggest clip video that we ever had. We had highlight videos that got over 50K. But obviously, those are highlights. Just a pure commentary video. The one that we did on Shohei Ohtani got 3.8 thousand views. So thanks so much for that. That was insane. I remember when we first posted that one, you know, wasn't expecting really anything more than, you know, 500 or so, you know, the usual that we usually get on clips. And that one hit, I think, 1,000 in like 6 hours or something, because I posted that one in the like late at night, maybe like midnight. And then I woke up at like 6:30 in the morning and it already had 1,000 views. That was one of the craziest videos that I think, you know, in terms of growth that we have ever really gotten. So hopefully, you know, the clips from this podcast will be good. So yeah, anyways, let's get into the topics. We're going to start with the NBA, obviously NBA finals. And just to get into the finals review. And I'm going to start off this with a few words about Draymond Green, from a Celtics fan, someone who watches the NBA and really just, you know, this series, I've learned you don't hate the Golden State Warriors until your team plays them in like an actual like important series. And as a fan of the Eastern Conference team in the Celtics, we've never had to play the Dynasty Warriors in an important series until now. And man, do I hate the Golden State Warriors now. And I appreciate them. I respect them completely. I respect the Warriors for their play, just how tough of a team they are to beat, how deep they are of a roster. Obviously, I went over at the start of this podcast the payroll, how much they've invested into winning their ownership. And their coaching with Steve Kerr has been tremendous, especially during the series. He did an awesome job maintaining all of the players and just keeping them focused, cool heads, and, you know, taking Curry out at times where you, as a normal fan, you'd think, you know, you need Curry in, but he'd take him out, give him rest, and then Curry comes back in, drills a ton of crazy shots, which, I mean, Curry was insane this series, but great job. After game one, after we won game one, you know, I was getting frustrated by Curry. Curry did a great job, of course, but I didn't hate the team. I didn't hate the team. But what really pissed the city of Boston off and pissed me off as someone who, you know, I like to, and this, you know, there's going to be bias here, obviously. I am a Celtics fan. But just as a fan of sports and a fan of players dealing with adversity, you know, going to opposing turf and fighting through that and the crowd. I'm a big believer in the crowd trying to do whatever they can to win. And maybe that's just the Boston in me coming out. But I'm a big believer in the crowd being able to do, as long as they're not like physically harming a player, to do whatever they want to get in the heads of the opposing team to try and help the team on the floor, on the field, on the, you know, on any playing surface, any sport, to help their home team win. And the Boston Celtics crowd decided to pick one player in game one to go after. Game three. Apologies, not game one. Game one was in Golden State, but I'm losing track of these games. Anyways, game three. First game at the Celtics. The Celtics crowd decided to pick Draymond Green because the previous two games, Draymond was being very physical, you know, as Draymond is. There was a clip of him, you know, running into people. He ran into like three guys to clear up to screen for Stephen Curry. It wasn't a screen. He was really just kind of like shoulder checking people. And he gets on the ground. You know, he's a feisty guy. You have to do that when you don't have a shot. You know, I respect Draymond, but he does act like he's a huge part of the Warriors winning, whereas it's really just Curry and Klay. Without Curry and Klay, Draymond is just a hustle player. He's just Patrick Beverley, basically. But that's besides the point. The crowd tried to get onto Draymond's screen by chanting F Draymond. When he got ejected for fouling out, chanting F Draymond. Because Draymond, you know, he chirps the opposing players. He likes to get in their heads. He likes to play physical. He just, there's plays on the court with Draymond where he's just running around checking people that you're like, you know, it's basketball and we like physical players, but physical players that are going to play, you know, physical and fair basketball, not just, okay, I'm going to run into the opposing player like I'm Patrick Willis and I'm going to just like completely tackle someone. That's what we don't like, because that's what a dirty player does. And Draymond, his personality isn't the best, as we know. He just gets under people's skin, and he obviously gets under the fan's skin, right? I'm frustrated with Draymond. I have never seen Draymond in person, right? I still get frustrated from him by the way he acts on the court. And the crowd reacting to how Draymond treats the Celtics started chanting F Draymond, okay? To get under his skin. Obviously, that worked because Draymond in, you know, his post-game press conference, you know, brought up that stuff. And really, the person who brought it up the most was Klay Thompson, where he brought up how that was swearing in front of children and how, you know, that we're at the game. And stay classy, Boston, was the line. So, going into this, I loved Klay Thompson, right? Klay Thompson is, you know, a redemptive story from the injury that he had and coming back and still playing like a all-star player. And ultimately, right now, another NBA championship under his belt. And, you know, just being in the finals alone is crazy. Great story. But when he, and even as an opposing fan, I was respecting him. You know, I was still a fan of Klay. But after he said that, I was completely out. Because you can't be saying stupid, utterly stupid things like that about the opposing crowd. And don't act like it's just Boston. Don't act like it's just Boston. You know, a lot of people like to do that. But, you know, we pull up the Golden State video from a couple years of the fan calling LeBron some nasty terms straight to his face. Not even like chance, just like straight up to his face. We have that whole video. So don't act like the people in the Bay Area are angels or anything, because they're not. Every other crowd in the NBA, every city, even Sacramento, even Sacramento, most likely, I'm sure you could pull up a clip of a bad crowd chant over there. You could do it with anybody. And like, it's not just Boston that's chanting F Draymond. There's gonna be a lot of other crowds doing the exact same thing, Klay Thompson. So don't act like you're taking the moral high ground here, because you're not. You're not. And the funny thing was the mashups after of Draymond saying he played like a, you know, word we can't say on this podcast, because we're clean. We are clean. We're not like at sporting events where you'd expect to hear, you know, bad words, because that's the real world. I'm sorry, Klay Thompson. That's the real world. You grew up. You're like 30 something. You should know that if you're going to a sporting event with 20,000 plus people, and especially if you're bringing a kid to that game, you gotta expect that someone's gonna swear, right? Okay, they're not murdering anybody, they're swearing. Oh no, someone has sworn. Swearing isn't the end of the world, okay? At a sporting event, because all crowds do it. I guess that's my point here, is that all crowds are swearing. That's a sporting event. Every single sporting event, you're gonna have people swearing. And as a parent of a child, if you are a parent of a child, if you have a kid, going to any sporting event, I don't care if it's a bowling, I don't know, name a weird sport, a bowling event, right? Expect people swearing. What are you guys doing on the court to each other during the game? What are you doing? You're swearing at each other. That is trash talk. The nastiest stuff. You know, MJ in the 90s, right? Said the nastiest stuff to get under player skin. And I'm sure Draymond, on the court, in the presence of, oh no, children, even his own, is probably calling Jason Tatum, while he's defending him, arguably the worst stuff someone could say to another human being. And why is he doing that? A competitive advantage. People don't get mad at players when a mic'd up moment comes out where they're trash talking and they're saying something like absolutely horrible to the other person. Why do we know? Because it's not, you know, they don't believe that stuff necessarily. You know, the players don't believe that stuff. They're just trying to get under the player's skin. They're trying to get the player to play bad the next game, during the game, or just find any competitive advantage in a series. So player to player, oh, that's fine. But crowd to player, oh no, you can't do that. Nah, you can. You can, Draymond. You can, Klay. Don't be a baby about it, okay? The way that you let the crowd get under your skin and how you publicly complained about it just made you seem like a complete and total baby. Total child. So before you start saying things like that, check yourself, Klay Thompson. Are you like Philip Rivers and you just never sworn on the court? Like Philip Rivers, how he just has the weirdest mic'd up clips because he doesn't swear for whatever reason, personal beliefs, I don't know. You know, that's him. But I'm pretty sure, Klay, you're not like that. I'm pretty sure every single game you've sworn on the court in the presence of children, even your own. Does Klay have children? I don't know, but you know, Draymond does. Draymond's done. But nonetheless, in the presence of children, which you think is such a horrible offense. So, first of all, just check yourself. Just check yourself before you do that. I had to get that off my chest there. Klay's just been, that remark was the stupidest thing, and you know, post finals now. it's not the most important thing ever to talk about, but we didn't get to record then. So now I'm talking about it. And yes, am I a firm believer in F. Draymond? Of course I am. I'm a Boston sports fan. Do I like Draymond? Nah, not really. Do I respect his hustle, his grit, and him himself trying to get under player skin? Yeah. Yeah, I do. But when a player is so good, if you really hate a player, that player's doing something well. If you hate him for on the court stuff. Either means he's getting under someone's skin. He's playing really well, like Stephen Curry. Stephen Curry, I don't think, is doing any like bad physical things like Draymond Green is. Do I not like him? Yeah. Why? Because he just torched my team. Just hitting shot after shot after shot. Same with Klay Thompson. I don't like Klay for that remark, of course. That really soured my view of Klay. But I also don't like him because he just torched my team. Same with Jordan Poole. Jordan Poole, I really couldn't find, you know, he seems like a great, he's a funny guy. Really great guy. I'd love to talk to Jordan Poole. Seems like a fun guy. But did I like him right now? No. Did I like him during the series? Nah. He hit crazy shots. And for a bench guy, you know, Pat shouldn't be doing stuff like that to my team. You know, his greatness just overshadowed. It just causes the opposing team to not like that team. So, do I hate the Golden State Warriors? Yeah. Do I hate the Golden State Warriors? But I'll say it this way. I hate the Golden State Warriors because they are great. And that's how you know you're a great team. If you have a lot of haters for reasons that you play so good and you win so much, that's how you know you're a good team. And the Golden State Warriors are a great team. And I hate them. Gladly, I will. I say I hate the Golden State Warriors, but I also appreciate them and respect them a whole lot. They are the greatest team, you know, I'd say of this decade, but we're in the 2020s now. Of the past 10 years, definitely. Definitely the Warriors franchise as a whole has built the greatest teams, for sure. And Stephen Curry, you know, the next point that I want to get to, Stephen Curry. This man is top 10 all time. You could argue even top 5. I'm not going to get there yet, but definitely top 10. And LeBron got 4 chips. Curry got 4 chips now, if you even want to look at it that way. And I don't love LeBron. I think LeBron is slightly overrated. Slightly. But Curry got 4. Shaq got 4. LeBron got 4. Curry's the greatest shooter of all time. All time. He got 4 rings now. 4 rings. Which is something that is absolutely insane for a guy of, you know, his stature and just how well he's been able to play. He's 34 now, and it's been insane for him. And I think we need to get the conversation going here of Curry as one of the all-time greats, one of the greatest point guards of all time. You know, him and Magic, I think, could go right now 1-2. And there's a lot of great point guards out there, and a lot of people would get at me for saying that. But I think him and Magic right now, they're close. They are really close. And Curry had a lot of help, but he's the one that started that thing. Back-to-back MVPs, 4 chips. Him and Klay, we know he's the he's the alpha for sure. You know, and he only played with one team. Never had to jump teams for success like LeBron or Durant. Stuck with one team. So just all the respect to Stephen Curry. We're going to take a quick break, quick little ad break, And we will be back with more just NBA Finals talk and some more of that. And we are back with just some Steph and Curry talk. Okay, so Steph Curry, right? I was just, before the break, I was just talking about how great Stephen Curry is, how he, you know, could be top five now. That's probably a reach, a little bit of recency bias, obviously. But definitely top 10 all time, for sure. For sure, all time top 10 right now. Game one, 34, 12 for 25, 7 for 14 from 3, 50% from 3. The way this man shoots and shot in that first game was absolutely insane. And how the Celtics, you know, initially, the games that the Celtics won, you know, Curry shot well. He shot well in every single game besides for game five. Game five was the Celtics' opportunity. And what did the Celtics do in game five? Absolutely, completely, and utterly imploded. The Celtics completely imploded. Curry shot, he had in 37 minutes. 16 points, 7 for 22, absolutely atrocious shooting, 0 for 9 from 3. So his best attribute, horrible, dog water, garbage, dumpster can, trash, however you want to say it, horrible. 4 rebounds, you know, 8 assists, his game where he had to pass the most, obviously because he shot like garbage, and 2 steals. On the defensive end, Curry was really effective. 3 steals in game 1, 3 steals in game 2, 2 steals in game 3, 0 in game 4, but again, offensive end, 43 points, 7 for 14 from 3. Hello, very good. 2 steals in game 5 and 2 steals in game 6, along with a nice little block. So Curry was insanely effective. His stat line, you know, was great. And in the Mavericks series, where the Warriors dismantled the Mavericks even faster than they dismantled the Celtics, Curry didn't shoot nearly as well towards the back half of that series, where he only scored 20 points and then 15 points in the last game against the Mavericks, where he shot 5 for 17. But again, game 1 for Curry, 34. Game 2, 29. Game 3, 31. Game 4, huge game for Curry, 43 points. Game 5. Warriors win that game thanks to Andrew Wiggins, who played insanely well throughout the series, and Klay Thompson. 16 points from Curry. Again, the Celtics, their opportunity was to dismantle Stephen Curry. In the one game they dismantled Stephen Curry, they let the rest of the team, which should have been the easiest thing to stop. No offense to a great supporting cast, but again, if you're taking Curry out of the game, you should win with the talent that you have on your roster. And they still got beat. Got beat bad. And then, again, game six, the Celtics looked slow the whole entire way. Turnovers on turnovers on turnovers. Curry turned it up. He had that one bad step, still won. And really, game five is kind of where the Celtics lost it, because when you saw that Curry had that bad game and they still lost, you're like, how are they going to win down like this with Curry playing on another level? Then Curry finally turned it up, 6 for 11 from 3, 12 for 21 total, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, 34 points, and he's pointing to his fourth finger after a 3 in the fourth quarter. He's saying, give me my ring. Ice cold, Stephen Curry. Ice cold. One of the players that I respect the most in this league, by far, Stephen Curry. And it's because of these games and just how insane, how he just makes things that look impossible, he makes them possible and dismantles great teams like this. And yes, the Celtics are young. Yes, they are too young right now to win a championship. The series clearly showed it because of inconsistencies with them. But when you're playing a guy like Stephen Curry, who has these types of games and rarely falters from that type of performance, and when he does falter from that performance, you fail. Celtics failed to stop him. the result you're going to get is a lost series. And that's 99 times out of 100. I came into the series knowing that the Warriors are going to be a tough team. All around depth, and then Curry. Because as good as Marcus Smart is as a defender, and I'm a big defender of his, defender of his defense, Stephen Curry's offense is going to beat any guard in this league. Because he's just that good. Because when he has no space, he has space. He's going to make that shot. You could put blindfold on him, turn him around, put Marcus Smart, prime Gary Payton, bring his son along too, you know, switch his team, put him on there, triple team, tell Curry to shoot. From 5 feet behind the three-point line, he's probably still going to hit it. You have to have real discipline, experience, just all-around toughness to stop a guy like Stephen Curry. Celtics didn't have that. And a lot of that, a lot of why the Celtics lost, I think, goes to their reserves. And the point I want to hit on is that the Celtics reserves suck. They suck. A lot of them were good in previous series. Derek White was great at the start of the series, and he was great during the playoffs. Turned into a primetime shooter, something that you don't usually get out of Derek White. And, you know, he was a great defender as well. At times, I liked him better than Marcus Smart because Smart and consistent on the offensive end. I was like, okay, Derek White, though, when he pulls up from three, he's going to hit it. And then these last two games, game five and game six, Derek White gave up. Derek White completely gave up. Dude sucked from three. Could not hit anything. You have air balls going left and right. Nothing there. Peyton Pritchard was absent the entire series. He's a guy, the only reason Peyton Pritchard is on the Boston Celtics is because he's a spot-up shooter. And he, you know, performs greatly as a spot-up shooter at the point guard. Again, air balls everywhere, nothing. Grant Williams, a hustle guy, rebounder, defender, and has turned into a pretty good three-point shooter. He's shooting like 50% sometimes during the season. Like, he was shooting really well from three. Could he hit a three in the playoffs? No. Disappeared. Game six, disappeared. When the Celtics needed to turn up the most, they sucked. They sucked. And a lot of that was because of the reserves. I don't think I can name a single player on the Celtics bench that I could trust in that whole entire series. Because every single time one of them would come in, I'd want them to go straight back out. Because they'd come on the floor, play like crap, and I'd be like, okay, Ime, get them out. But, obviously, we have to give Tatum a breather. You have to give Jalen a breather. You have to give Rob Will a breather. You got to give Big Al a breather, who was playing his heart out the whole entire series. You could see he wanted a championship desperately, but the players around him didn't have that same feeling. Smart was playing reckless in a bad way. Did not have a care in the world for what he was doing and just shot recklessly, which is something he does anyways. But it hurts a lot in the NBA Finals. In the regular season, you know, we can forgive that, but NBA Finals, not so much. Not so much, Marcus. Maybe pass it next time. And, you know, even the players in the series that I think did really well, like Jaylen Brown, was consistent. And I think consistency is the key to this team. And for a very young team, consistency is hard to come by. And that's the problem, ultimately, with Jason Tatum and why he can't win this, why he didn't win this series, and why I don't think he can win an NBA Finals yet, is that he doesn't have consistency. Jaylen Brown does. Game one, 24 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 1 block. Game two, he only played 28 minutes, but he had 17 points. 5 for 17, not as great shooting, but 3 for 9 from 3. You know, did his stuff on the rebound and defensive end. Game three, 27 points, 9 for 16, 4 for 8 from 3, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. Game four, he had 21, 9 for 19. Game five, 18, 5 for 18. Wasn't too good in that one. That was one of his slip-up games. And then you know, game six, the game where it all fell apart, he was really, him and Al were the two bright spots. Jalen has a drive and you can see that he cares. Whereas Tatum, it seems like Tatum gives up a little too much. You know, Tatum likes to view himself as a Kobe. You know, he wants to be like Kobe. Well, if you want to be like Kobe, start trying a little more. When it doesn't, where it looks like the game's over, just keep going. Anyways, don't give up. Because Kobe didn't give up. When Kobe played on horrible teams, he didn't give up. He still played his heart out. Jason Tatum, you're playing on an NBA Finals team, and when you see the little dark spot, a little dark spot in the game, he shuts down, gets inconsistent, starts airballing threes, doesn't get back on defense, starts taking take fouls, which is one of the most annoying things that he does, which gets him in foul trouble, so he has to get subbed out. Stop doing the take fouls and just hustle back on defense. It's lazy. Would Kobe do that? No. I don't know where he gets some of the mentalities that he does that you can see on the floor. But it's just, it leads to inconsistency, it leads to frustration, and it leads to the rest of the team just falling flat on their face. So Tatum, and a lot of times he brings the team up. He certainly does. But a lot of times brings them completely down. Game one, in 42 minutes, he had 12 points. 3 for 17, and 1 for 5 from three. Everybody praises him for his passing. Oh, when he didn't get it done shooting, he got it done passing. He found out he couldn't shoot, so he started passing. He had 13 assists. Wow, that's great. That's great for Jason Tatum, except he still took 17 shots. He was still shooting out there. He was still shooting, and it affects the team poorly if you only got 12 points. And you can't do that as a superstar in the NBA Finals. Again, he's 24. What he's doing right now for a 24-year-old getting to the NBA Finals alone is an impressive feat. This team overachieved by a mile. But I'm just pointing out the flaws in Tatum's game that he needs to fix if he wants to be considered the upper echelon of the NBA. Because right now, I'm not ready to put him there when he's playing like this. Game 2, good game, 28 points, 8 for 19. Game 3, 26, 9 for 23. Game 5, 23, 8 for 23. Shooting splits just aren't too good. And there'll be times where he just goes ice cold for a little bit. Doesn't show up. And that's a big problem. Game 5, he had 27, 10 for 20. Good shooting split, right? 50% shooting. Really, really good. But still, obviously, lost that game. Couldn't take advantage of Curry having his one soul bad game that you knew that you might not even get. But when they got it, they still lost. And then game 6, he gave up. Flat out, Jason Tatum gave up. 13 points, 6 for 18, 1 for 4. You can see it in the turnovers. Tatum has the most turnovers in playoff history for one playoff. The most. He just needs to figure it out. And it's going to come, the consistency is going to come with effort, and it's going to come with just maturity. And Tatum has overachieved for his young career, for sure. And if he won the championship, man, we'd definitely be looking at this with a different different lens. But he's definitely overachieved, for sure. He just needs to clean up the inconsistencies. And that's why he just needs to get back in the gym. He needs to start looking for his teammates more. Go to Jalen Brown. For as young as he is, he's figured out his consistency. Jalen is one of the guys that is showing effort all the time, and you can see it in his play. He's a hungry, hungry player. He shows consistency no matter what. And that's something that's always irked me about Tatum. You can see Tatum's the more naturally gifted player, for sure. And that's why everybody views him as that, as the leader of the team. But he doesn't have what Brown has yet. And what Brown has is that ultimate consistency. You can rely on him every single game. Tatum doesn't have the consistency yet. Flat out doesn't have the consistency. But once he gets that consistency, once he can keep playing, you know, keep those natural gifts that he has and put them out at a consistent rate, that's when the Celtics will be able to win a championship. Could it be next year? Of course it can. Because they made it to the NBA Finals this year, for sure. Will they make it back next year? I'm not going to doubt it. I think they can. They definitely need to improve the reserves, and they're young as well. They'll get more mature. The team, what it lacks is maturity, and what comes with, and they also lack consistency. What comes with maturity? Consistency, hustle, and just an ultimate, you know, a hunger to win. To not give up when things look like they're unwinnable. And that's something Tatum needs to get eventually. So there's the little finals roundup. Now into some fun stuff, you know? Some fun stuff. The Utah Jazz, I saw this on Twitter today. They put out their new jerseys, which I didn't even realize were coming out. I thought the Jazz were, you know, the jerseys that they have are fine. They've had them for a little bit now since after Deron Williams left, which was like 2011, maybe around there. Pretty much the same color scheme, the blue and the yellow and the green, which wasn't the most pleasing, but it looked pretty good for a jersey scheme. But now, what do we have here? The new Utah Jazz jerseys for the 2022 and 2023 seasons. And they also released 2023 and 2024 season jerseys, which why would you release those now? I don't know. Maybe it was to cover up for these ones, which are atrocious. So they brought back the 90s throwback jerseys that they've had before, which I think look really good. Those won't be their main jerseys, I believe. It's going to be these other three, which look horrible. So the first one we're going to get to is a black one. It's black and a neon yellow. The yellow looks horrific. So when I saw the yellow that they used for the these jerseys, it just, ugh, disgusting. Just really bad. And these have gotten pretty negative receptions. They've been called AAU jerseys. They do look like they're from AAU. They don't look like NBA jerseys. It's really bad. Nike did a horrible job with these, and I don't understand why Utah even rebranded here. But the first ones are black, and they have that neon yellow with Utah and the Jordan logo on it. This one I'm okay with slightly. It's not a good jersey, but you know, it's acceptable. It's just really plain. Just Utah and yellow lettering, and it's all black. There's nothing really special about it. The next one is an ugly one. Really ugly. It's that yellow from that black jersey that's on the lettering and the numbering, but as the jersey color and the shorts color. So it's just disgusting, like, yellow. It looks like piss. It's just bad overall. Just a horrible jersey. I'd never be caught in this. I don't even know how they're going to sell those jerseys. Bad. I think the Jazz saw their team imploding and was like, okay, let's make some jerseys to match our imploding franchise here. Because these are horrible. Donovan Mitchell, I'd get my ass out of Utah right now. I would have gotten my ass out with the old jerseys with these. I'm not getting caught wearing these. These are a joke. Absolute joke. So this is a yellow jersey with the same lettering as the black one. Just the lettering is black now. It's reversed. And it says Jazz instead of Utah. It just looks bad. And then the other one is a different version of what the alternate that they already had with the Jazz logo across the front with the smaller number. And yellow sleeves around the sleeve hole and around the collar. You have that ugly yellow and the rest is just white and black. Which, honestly, I think the worst one out of the three is the whole yellow one, because that color is disgusting. And then the second worst has to be the white one, because the white one's super simplistic, and then the yellow on it looks horrible. It looks kind of like a Drew League jersey, but they put yellow on it. to make it look bad. And the lettering's super generic and not cool like a Drew League jersey would have. So pretty ugly. These jerseys are some of the worst that I think have come out in recent memory. But the Jazz tried to save this with their City Edition jerseys that are coming in 2023 to 2024. Why tell us about those now? I have no clue. But actually, these ones I think are kind of cool. So per Ben Anderson on Twitter, the Utah Jazz will also have these City Edition jerseys. Ooh, City Edition jerseys next season. Plus the original New Orleans era classic jersey in the 2023 and 24 season. So the first one is kind of like the old jersey a little bit, but it has this kind of like nice darker purple on the mountains in the front. Utah across the front, smaller letter number on the bottom. These ones actually look really, really good. I love these jerseys. And the Jazz usually, you know, their alternate jerseys that they've had with Nike have looked really good, especially those orange ones that they had a little bit back a few seasons ago. But the new main ones suck. But these ones that are coming with 2023 and 2024 look good. So they're giving us crap for this season, but good jerseys in the future. A little confusing, but is what it is. And then the old New Orleans era jerseys, good, refreshing. They look like alternates. They have the old Nike logo kind of on there. And they, you know, the Jazz logo is a little different, but overall looks pretty good. So the 2023-2024 seasons for the alternates look great, but when you're going into the main jerseys for next season, I don't think I'm going to be able to watch a Jazz game without crying my eyes out because these look horrible. And if I ever see anybody buy this, I am going to revoke their privilege to have money because I have no clue what they were trying to do here. Why they even made new jerseys, well, money, obviously, but why they chose that to be their new jersey, I don't know. Anyways, drop your opinions. Tweet at me about those jerseys. Are they good? Are they bad? I think it's pretty clear that they're bad, but maybe someone likes those for some reason. I don't know. I revoked your credit card, please. But just tell me about them. Do you like them? I don't. At all. But, you know, I'm just me. You're you. Do you like them? This is going to be a YouTube clip probably too, so YouTube comment that thing, man. Just talk to me about that. Anyways, let's get into the next topic, which is not jerseys, but instead is Christian Wood, center for the Houston Rockets, no more. He got traded to the Mavericks. When I first saw this one come across the timeline, I was like, I didn't realize we could trade yet, but apparently we can, so that's cool and awesome during the NBA Finals. So the Mavericks agreed to a trade where they traded the number 26 overall pick in this year's draft, Boban Marjanovic, Trey Burke, and Marquise Chris, and Sterling Brown, don't forget Sterling Brown, to the Houston Rockets in exchange for Christian Wood. Christian Wood has been a pretty good center for the Houston Rockets. Obviously, the Rockets, not a lot of stuff going on, so stats could be inflated a little bit. But Wood played good in Detroit prior to this, and he's on a cheap contract, I believe $14 million, 13 actually, now that I'm looking at it. And he's only 26. He's been pretty good this season for the Rockets, averaging 17.9 in 30 minutes, 50% from the field. He's a stretch big, 39% from three, his best percentage he's had in his whole entire career, and he's averaging 10 rebounds a game, so a double-double. This is pretty good, because for the Mavericks. I think this trade's good for the Rockets as well, as really Christian Wood wasn't going to do anything for them. They're not in win-now mode, as the Mavericks are. So that wasn't going to do anything for them. And Boban's not going to do anything for them. Trey Burke's not going to do anything for them. Marquise Chris isn't going to do anything for them. Sterling Brown's not going to do anything for them. That was pretty much, I'm pretty sure, just to make salary work for this trade. And they get the 26th pick. So they get a pick. Nothing's really going to come of that, I don't think. But the Rockets just needed to clear up room for Alperen Sengun to get minutes, their younger guy from last year's draft. So he's going to get his minutes that they need. The Rockets will continue to develop their young guys. They got the 26th pick that they could package, maybe using a different thing, or draft someone that they could hope turns into something. I don't think it's going to be anything, but, you know, really, they just needed to get Christian Wood out of there. So that's all they really needed to for me to give them a win in this trade. So there you go. The Mavericks, though, for only giving up that stuff, which wasn't going to impact them in the future at all. I don't think 26 pick was going to turn into anything, and I don't think Boban was really going to do anything for them either. To get Christian Wood, who these past few years has proven himself as a good center, stretch big, and a version of Porzingis, I think that can hopefully perform better than Porzingis on a better contract, and who's younger. And, you know, now you got Luka and Jalen Brunson and a team that, if they re-sign Jalen Brunson, I'm assuming they would. I hope they will. If they don't, it's kind of a dumb move. I don't really know what they're doing. And then Dinwiddie as well. They have all those guys. That made it to Western Conference Finals, that team, which I was really surprised about. Now you're adding another weapon for Luka to take the pressure off of Luka. So I think anything to get the pressure off of Luka is overall a good move. And for as cheap of a player as Wood is, and to have that efficiency from three from a big man in today's NBA, it's what you need. So I think this Wood trade for the Mavericks is very, very, very good. Very good. And anybody that says that, you know, even if this trade doesn't work out, what are you giving up? You're giving up the 26th overall pick, bunch of reserves you weren't going to use. So they didn't really have to give up anything. Was the 26th pick going to turn into anything? No, this isn't the Spurs front office now. They weren't going to draft anything there. Anybody that values the back half of the NBA draft, you have to get really, really lucky. And it's not like the NFL draft where you can, you know, you got 53 roster spots. You can evaluate pretty damn well in the NFL. NBA, a lot tougher to evaluate. So you really got to luck into things like with the Raptors and Pascal Siakam at 27. Jordan Poole, obviously, I believe at 30, right? So you really got to luck into things. And Christian Wood here for the Mavericks, I'll take him over a number 26 pick any day, and a bunch of guys that you could probably get on a minimum contracts. I'll trade him away for Christian Wood for sure. So overall, great trade for the Mavericks. You know, A+. Great, great trade. And then the Rockets, they had to get rid of, you know, we knew they were going to have to get rid of him eventually. So might as well do it now when you have a young guy that needs to take those minutes. So we're going to take another quick break, and we will be back on the other side, switching from the NBA over to a little bit of NFL, and then we will be done with the podcast. And yeah. And we are back with the NFL, and we got two topics for today. Just quick, you know, this podcast already hour plus right now, just strictly on the NBA. So we're only going to talk a little bit about the NFL, but here we go. And the first topic that we got today is we have another dumpster fire on the horizon in the NFL. As you know, I love to call out bad front offices, and the dumpster fire front office for today, you could probably guess, is the Cleveland Browns. You know, a very common one. I love to rag the Texans. This one was connected to the Texans, but now is a Cleveland Brown. His name is Deshaun Watson. He has 24 assault cases. Whoa, that's crazy. So what did the Cleveland Browns do? Now, obviously, this is all alleged, and we're going to treat it as alleged. Still, Cleveland Browns, what they did is stupid. Very stupid, and something that no other front office should be doing. The Falcons dodged a complete bullet here by not getting this man, Deshaun Watson. He has 24 assault cases now, 66 alleged from a New York Times article. So it's been getting worse and worse by the day. Man just keeps getting cases. And the Browns, knowing this, knowing he had all these alleged all these allegations and knowing he had these cases, which I think you should take very seriously, decided to give him $230 million guaranteed. Because they did an internal investigation. They said everything's all good. All good, guys. Everything's all good. He's fine. He's fine. Just 24 allegations. He's good. Let's give him $230 million. Yeah. Good job, team. What are you doing? What are you doing? And what makes this even worse is that, you know, Baker Mayfield, you could get on him for all of his inconsistencies, you know, for pretty much making Odell irrelevant. But he was the quarterback that got you out of irrelevancy, got you a playoff appearance. And after 3 years, you're just going to toss him to the side, bringing out a guy that probably won't even play for you this year because he'll be suspended for the whole year. Might not even play for you ever if, for some reason, you know, it's likely, honestly, you know, if you got 24 cases, one of them, there's probably something up there. Probably something up. He might not even play for you ever. Deshaun Watson might never suit up for a regular season game for the Cleveland Browns. And when that happens, Baker's not playing for you. You completely disrespected him. Didn't tell him what was going on. Just brought him in and said, okay, you're out, pretty much. He asks out kindly, as he should. Why? He's a starting level quarterback. Why would he want to sit behind a guy with 24 allegations? And you pretend he's the bad guy. Andrew Berry, it seems that you made a mistake. You made a mistake, and I don't even think you're going to be that good with Deshaun Watson. Anyways, even if he did suit up. So I'm not really a fan of your trade in the first place. But man, you're a dumpster fire. The Texans were a dumpster fire. They robbed you. I don't even know. I'm not sure how the draft pick situation's going to work if Watson, you know, is locked away forever from the NFL, not in prison, but in the NFL. If he just never suits up again, I really hope they lose that $230 million, and I really hope they lose all the draft picks. Do you know why? They deserve it. I feel bad for the city of Cleveland. I feel bad for their fans. Do I feel bad for the front office? Do I feel bad for the organization? Hell no. They deserve it. The front office deserves it because they are stupid. Stupid. One of the stupidest organizations I think that has ever existed. And, you know, I used to think the Texans were bad. They still are. Still not a good situation over there. But at least they fleeced you. The stupid fleeced the stupider. Is what happened there. That's what happened there. So, Deshaun Watson, if you're innocent, you know, Cleveland really, they still gave up too much. They still gave up too much. But, you know, the Browns will luck out. But they're really betting on you a lot. And it's a stupid bet. So, Cleveland Browns, I just want to let you know, you're a dumpster fire. And until you can somehow get yourself out of this hole, you're still a dumpster fire. NFL's trying to get you on a year-long ban, Deshaun Watson. Jacoby Brissett is now your starting quarterback for Cleveland Browns. Baker's not playing for you. I would trade him if I were you. Get something in return. But he's your $230 million man. He's not playing for you. So good luck with that, Andrew Berry. I wish you the very much, very much all the luck in the world. And I hope nothing but the best for you in your little dumpster fire. Have fun in the dumpster, you horrible GM. So that's all I'm going to talk about for the Browns. But now just for the last quick little thing here in the NFL. Calvin Ridley, I didn't get to talk about this, I don't believe, besides for on Twitter, but Calvin Ridley got a year-long suspension, which obviously if Calvin Ridley's getting a year-long suspension for this, Deshaun Watson should get the scale for that. It should be like, you know, Deshaun should get a lot more. But Calvin Ridley got a year-long suspension for betting $2,000 while he wasn't with the team last year. He bet on the Atlanta Falcons, right? So usually when you see this, it's someone betting against the team, playing on the team, on his team, betting against them, and then like intentionally like messing up some plays and stuff so he wins or whatever. So sabotaging the team while getting paid. Calvin Ridley, first of all, wasn't even on with the team. He bet on his own team. So he had no effect on anything in the game. He was just betting on his teammates to win the game. He didn't throw a game. He didn't do anything of that. And now I understand the NFL rulebook doesn't allow that. Why? Not really sure. Betting on your team, I think, should be completely fine, especially when it's only $2,000. Is Calvin Ridley stupid for doing this? Yes. Yes, he is. He's very stupid for doing that. But I think there's rules that should change so this stuff doesn't happen anymore. Let the players bet on their own team, because it's not a bad offense if they're not impacting the game, which Calvin Ridley's clearly not impacting the game by betting on his own team, that he's not playing in the game. He's away from the team for personal matters. So obviously a year-long suspension for that, a little far, especially when Roger Goodell, you suspended Ray Rice for 4 games and Greg Hardy for like 6. PEDs gets like 4. So why are we suspending domestic abusers and PED users 4 games, 8 games, not even year long? And we're going to suspend the guy who bet on his own team, you know, has a little DraftKings account or something and bets $2,000 on, you know, a prop bet for his teammate, you know, I don't know, you know, on his teammate, on Matt Ryan or someone to get like over 300 yards. Why are we suspending that guy a year? It just shows the kind of corruption and misjudgment that Roger Goodell has in the NFL. And I don't think enough people are talking about how dumb his rulings have been. You know, there's been coverage on it, certainly, but I don't think it gets glorified enough. That's what I'm trying to do here. Just Calvin Ridley suspension. Stupid. So I'd like to end this podcast with free Calvin Ridley, please. And, at the very least, don't make him a year suspended, because I'm sure that if it was... domestic violence or anything like that, it probably, knowing the NFL, would be like 6 games. So get your act together, NFL, and shorten Calvin Ridley's suspension to like a game. It shouldn't even be a suspension, but here we are. So that's gonna be it for Second Take episode 41. Thank you guys so much for supporting. Couldn't do this without you guys. Happy to be back. Hopefully we'll get some more consistency going. Maybe all 108 and, you know, we'll do an episode together again, because it's been a long time. It's just been me for a while. So maybe we'll get that going. Follow me on Twitter at BillySRP. You could follow the podcast at Sports Report Podcast on Instagram and at Sports Report Po1 on Twitter. And you can subscribe to us on YouTube. Second Take on YouTube. So, and also check out all the clips and stuff over there. Pretty good. You could also go check out my other podcast, The Scouting Board, where we look at all the draftees from this year's draft and coming up. Soon we'll be looking at the prospects for next year's NFL draft. So guys, thank you so much for listening, and I will see you again. Peace.